Whether it's seeking overall health, improving negative symptoms, or managing weight, we are always looking for new ways to feel better and live healthier. The American Medical Association, along with many other trusted medical professionals, have found that the cornerstone of overall health is a happy, healthy gut. Gut health plays a crucial role in promoting proper digestion, enhancing immunity, and maintaining a healthy metabolism. When those elements come together, you feel better, digest properly, eliminate waste, and absorb more nutrients. Our guts affect everything from our energy levels and mood to weight management and longevity. To improve gut health, many of us have turned to probiotics or prebiotics in the hope that they will balance what is known as the gut microbiome. So what's better than prebiotics or probiotics? How about prebiotics, probiotics, and postbiotics all in one capsule? Bioma is just that. Bioma is scientifically formulated to help you rebalance your gut bacteria. To give it a try, visit gobioma.com/rain for 15% off your first order. Bioma is not a fat burner, weight loss pill, or stimulant, although one of the key ingredients has been found to reduce belly fat percentage in just 8 weeks. Just two of Bioma's delayed-release capsules before breakfast will have your gut on a reset journey. The delay ensures the probiotic actually passes through your stomach intact, delivering more active bacteria to your gut than 96% of other probiotics. Bioma is science-backed, third-party tested, and vegan. To get started on transforming your gut and overall health, visit gobioma.com/rain. That's gobioma.com/rain for 15% off your first order.
The Redmond Police Department is familiar with both the victim and suspect in this case because of an active stalking investigation that was occurring. This is the absolute worst outcome, for a stalking case. This is every victim, every detective, every police chief's worst nightmare.
Just over 2 years ago, news broke about a murder that shocked everyone, especially those in the podcasting community. An obsessive fan gunned down a young woman and her husband. It's the nightmare of anyone who puts themselves in the public eye. For Zora Sadeghi, the danger was worth it as she cared deeply about helping those in the Farsi tech community. Today, I'll be telling the story of Zora, her husband Milad, and how once again there were dire warnings but no actions taken to protect them from the zealot who had them in his sights. Zora Sadeghi was born in Iran around 1990. Due to the international nature of this case, information about Zora is difficult to find. What is known is that she and her husband, Mohammad Milad Nasiri, who went by his middle name, moved to Washington State in 2011. At that time, it's unclear how long they had been married, but Zora was 21 and Milad was 23. A life-changing move to the other side of the world was for a good reason: school and careers. Working as a researcher and web developer in Iran, Zora attended the University of Washington before participating in their Tacoma PhD and graduate programs. As for Milad, he attended the Sharif University of Technology before starting work with a software company. Fun fact, as a teenager, Milad was ranked as one of the best singers in the capital city of Tehran. Staying in the Seattle area after school, the tech hub was an ideal location for the young couple. Zora worked at a mortgage company before becoming a software engineer. Milad was also in software, starting with Amazon in January of 2022. This was after he had worked with Google and CDK Global. In 2021, they were settling into their careers and looking forward to their life together. Part of that future included purchasing their home in Redmond, which is just 15 miles northeast of Seattle. The couple had two passions, tech and helping others. On Milad's socials, he posted, "Feel free to reach out to me." And his Twitter stated, "I don't plan on moving from my current job anytime soon, but I will be happy to connect with anyone." He didn't have any posts on his Twitter, but he shared that he would be doing so in English and Farsi. He was against mass surveillance and had an extensive background in engineering and coding. And you know I hate not having more background information on the victims to share with you, you know, who they were as a person. So in this case, we will have to use their own words and the comments from others. Zora posted on her LinkedIn profile, I am a driven, self-motivated individual looking to expand my horizons by learning to build software the right way as part of a bigger team. I am self-sufficient and thrive in ambiguity. Here are some comments about her work skills and ethic. Zora is a highly skilled software engineer who is thorough, understands software best practices, creates great documentation, and is able to understand difficult code. She has consistently demonstrated an excellent work ethic and is committed to delivering projects at a high standard. I am consistently impressed with her technical expertise and ability to leverage it to solve complex problems. She is also a great communicator who is able to articulate technical concepts to both technical and non-technical audiences with excellent diagrams. This trait, combined with her excellent problem-solving skills, allowed her to deliver high-impact features to our clients. She has the skills and experience necessary to deliver superior results in any software engineering role. Zora is a passionate software engineer and has been a pleasure to work with. She took challenging tasks and completed them with ease, often with a smile on her face and always ready for the next. Continuous learning is a passion she has, and the rest of the team benefited greatly from her ability to share knowledge. It was a pleasure to work with Zora, and I would love to work with her again if given the opportunity. She has strong technical and analytical skills that allow her to come up with solid solutions. Zora collaborates well with others and is always willing to help. She shares knowledge and feedback in a timely fashion, enabling others to grow their skills and learn. Along with sharing, she is open to ideas and input from others, which is great when building a solid team. Zora is a great developer who always focuses on delivering the software using the best practices with a high level of quality. She does everything needed to get it at the best state possible. She's able to hold the pressure and work on the company's interest, and she is skillful. On the personal side of it, she is a great coworker who is always open to help or discuss solutions, and even to talk and build a friendship. As a fellow student, I can comfortably assert that Zora is a thorough student who puts nothing before her studies and does not hold anything back when it comes to classes. I have attended theoretical classes with her, and I am able to say that I would love to repeat the experience anytime and relive the joy I got from her enthusiastic class participation. Even without a detailed background, it's clear Zora took her work as seriously as she took being helpful and kind to others. At some point, she decided to put her two passions together and created a tech-focused podcast for Farsi speakers. It has also been reported that the audio she provided wasn't set up and distributed in a traditional podcast fashion, but it was more of a chat situation on the app Clubhouse, which I'll get into in a minute. While Farsi is not in the top 10 list of languages used in the tech industry, there are still over 120 million Farsi speakers worldwide, and there is a huge population of speakers within the tech industry. As a woman in tech speaking Farsi, Zora was a trailblazer. Her informative audio provided listeners with resources and access to the tech world that wasn't always offered, especially in our Muslim-phobic, anti-Middle East society. Most important to Zora, it helped those who needed it. For those who work in media of any form, mainstream, social, news, podcasting, there's always a little voice in the back of your head reminding you to be careful about what information is shared and how you respond to people. I'm very lucky as a woman who works in the media to have never had to have dealt with such a horrible situation as a stalker. Stalking is a situation far more prevalent than most people realize. From stalkingawareness.org, here are some stalking stats. First, a definition of stalking. It's a pattern of behavior directed at a specific person that would cause a reasonable person to fear for their safety or the safety of others or suffer substantial emotional distress. From reported cases, so as usual, we can only assume the actual number is probably much higher, there are approximately 13.5 million Americans that are stalked in any given year period. No surprise that stalking affects women 100% more than men, with 1 in 3 women experiencing stalking at some point in their lives. 50% of victims reported stalking happening before they were 25 years old, and 25% of that was before they were 18. A majority of stalkers know their victims, 40% of stalkers being made up of former or even current partners. 42% are acquaintances. The stat where the guys rank higher is the threat of violence, with 80% of male victims being threatened with harm and 69% of females reporting the same. Some of the more common forms of stalking are phone calls, texts, emails, approaching the victim unexpectedly or following them, sending unwanted presents, tracking or spying. The average frequency of these violations is about once a week. 1 in 3 stalkers have done so before, and the most likely offender to be threatening or to inflict violence are intimate partners. Stalking can affect every aspect of a victim's life. Many victims lose time from work, have to move, suffer from depression, anxiety, insomnia, social dysfunction, and agoraphobia. The statistic that caused me to gasp is that 11% of reporting victims have been stalked for 5 years or more. I cannot imagine that. You hear so many horror stories about stalking and how it can feel like a parasite has infiltrated every aspect of your life. And for some people, it goes on for years. It reminds me of the Soon Cindy episode where they weren't sure if she was stalked or if she was harming herself.
Oh, that was what an awful case that was. Wow.
And for years.
Yeah. I don't know how people live with that either.
No. And the lack of support, legal support. People have support in their lives, but maybe not always. And then if you can't prove it enough or it's not enough of a threat and they're not breaking enough of a law, you're just stuck with that.
Or physically assaulting you yet.
Yeah. Well, we got to wait till they try to kill you and then we can do something. Stalking to me is one of the worst. That's almost like being netted where your identity is stolen and no one believes you.
Yeah.
The feeling of insanity that that would cause. So to anyone listening that has dealt with or is dealing with a stalker, I cannot offer you enough sympathy because I can't really imagine anything more mind-melting. A huge reason for these cases dragging on or stalkers being allowed to roam is the laws and understanding surrounding stalking. In all 50 states, stalking is illegal. Jaywalking is also illegal, so that doesn't really matter as much as the classification, and that's where things get a bit ugly. Less than 1/3 of states classify stalking as a felony. For over half the states, felony status doesn't come into play until a second offense or aggravating factors. For example, in Oregon, stalking is considered a Class A misdemeanor, the same as a DUI, sex work, and fourth degree assault. Stalking becomes a Class C felony, similar to joyriding, third-degree robbery, and dogfighting, when the perpetrator has a previous conviction for stalking or violation of a protective order. The maximum sentence for a Class C felony is 5 years in prison and/or a $125,000 fine. In Washington, the law is pretty much the same, but aggravated factors include if the victim is a cop, judge, juror, lawyer, advocate, legislator, corrections officer, basically anyone who in any capacity works for prisons, jails, courthouses, CPS, so on and so forth. The technology Zora loves so much and the surveillance Milad was against is a huge component these days in stalking. The internet and accessibility to information has made stalking that much easier. In fact, twice as many stalking cases involve the use of technology than those without. 2 out of 3 stalkers stalk at least once a week, but daily is nearly as common, and they tend to use more than one method, meaning one day they might drive by your home and the next they'll send you an unwanted DM. It was through technology that Zora met the then 38-year-old Ramin Kodakarem Rezai. As I said earlier, it was reported that Zora's work was a podcast, but it really was more of an accessible chat in the app Clubhouse. In case anyone listening is as well-versed as I in the world of Clubhouse, which is to say, not at all, here is a boring description of an audio-based app. Clubhouse is an app for your phone, which was released in 2019. It was originally focused on podcasting, but when the pandemic hit, it transitioned into being more of a communication and community-building app. In 2021, Mark Zuckerberg appeared on the app, and it grew in popularity. The most popular feature on the app is Rooms. What makes Clubhouse unique is that it is an audio-based app. Some rooms are open and just a space for people to hang out and chat. Others are closed and require an invitation. From what I can tell, Zora created a room, and again, I apologize for being a woman in her mid-40s who has no concept about anything I'm saying, really. So please feel free to actually send me an email if this is incorrect.
I also have no idea what you are talking about. What's this now?
The kids were using it. The cool kids.
Which app is this?
Clubhouse.
Never even heard of it. I've never, no.
So I think it's more like, you know how kids today are sending voice memos instead of texts?
I do.
I think it's kind of the same idea. So instead of being in a room just texting, you were actually verbally communicating, but not in a phone call and not like a Zoom call. I think that's, again, from reading about an app. Maybe in our update, someone will break this down.
I'm not online enough, I guess, to know things like that. I use it for very basic things.
You use it like I used it back in early days of internet, where I'm like, I can check my email and go into groups. That's what the internet is. I didn't know there were like websites to go to.
Yeah, I've always been a website guy. I like to read about things and then never interact with anyone. Kind of like my regular life.
That's true.
Interesting. I just had an epiphany, I think.
So Zora created a room for Farsi speakers interested in the tech world. And it appears that her being a moderator led to the confusion of her hosting what you would deem a more traditional podcast like this one, where it's on platforms and you stream it from places. I believe hers was just on Clubhouse.
Was it something that was stored there or it's live and then it's that's it?
Well, now you're asking too many questions.
Oh, OK. I thought maybe it was just like FaceTime. I feel and sound old, and I know I'm just asking questions.
Let me add to it. There are also houses, events, and clubs within Clubhouse. So I think it's, in my mind, I'm picturing it as old school AOL chat rooms.
And they had topics.
And you could go in and people were chatting. I don't know.
You're like, I want to hear about rock guitars.
Yes.
Or rock guitarists.
And so you had like the main rooms, and then you could do private chats, and then you could do other more specific rooms. So I feel like it's that, but people could, you're talking, not typing.
So it's like you're in a room having a conversation among others.
I just don't know.
That's
what it sounds like. Yes.
At the Clubhouse.
And so I think she maybe recorded things that perhaps did just stay on her page or whatever. I love how insane this sounds.
Or did they?
And someone that loves Clubhouse is screaming at us right now, and I'm so sorry.
I don't think anyone's using it.
I've been the screamer on the other side. I get it. So I think she maybe put information like, here's the episode about Farsi tech, this topic, and then maybe left it and then had groups within that.
This feels like a commercial we'd see during Price is Right for getting someone to like send you a pamphlet about using the internet.
I can talk to my grandson now on our special telephone.
Like, yeah, a senior with a laptop and there's cords all over them.
You know, I don't mind being old. I just don't.
Well, we're not real old yet.
Older. Yeah. Old enough to sound like this.
I
don't mind.
And I didn't know I was that old until right now.
Zora was utilizing Clubhouse in late 2021 when she befriended Ramin. At first, it appeared he was interested in getting her help so he could get a tech job. In her efforts to go above and beyond, Zora not only chatted with Ramin, but at some point she did meet up with him in person to talk about his career goals. Soon after, Ramin's interests shifted from seeking mentorship to personal questions and obsessive behaviors. When Ramin expressed interest outside of work, Zora made it very clear she was not interested. In our world of social media, public figures are expected to provide a new level of accessibility that we've never experienced. Hearing Zora's voice, learning about her personal life, following her on social media, all of that could have caused Ramin to think that he had a personal connection to her. We've seen so many times with other celebrities and their stalkers. A kind word or interaction can be misconstrued as intimacy. Once Ramin's focus shifted from getting career guidance to Zora directly, he quickly became obsessed with her. Zora had been cautious as to not give any personal information out on Clubhouse or to Ramin. Even so, he was able to get her and her husband, Malad's, phone numbers. From their seemingly harmless meeting in late 2021 through most of 2022, Ramin had started to stalk Zora. The stalking began with phone calls. Ramin would call Zora constantly. She wouldn't answer, so he would leave offensive, angry, vulgar, and threatening voicemails that would be directed at Zora, Malad, or both of them. There was confusion and concern as to how Ramin was able to track down their phone numbers, but the how didn't matter. It was too late and he had all the info he needed. Of course, they blocked the numbers they knew Ramin used, but he would use other numbers, and he would even use phones in the hotels he would stay in for work. Ramin's job would actually play a crucial role in the unfolding of this case. Ramin was based in Texas, but he was a long-haul trucker. This would have him on the road for weeks at a time and kept his whereabouts unknown. When he finished a shift and stayed at a motel or a hotel, he would then use the phone to call Zora because she wouldn't have a chance to have blocked him yet. Pretty manipulative and hideous behavior. Zora did what she could to keep Ramin away, but he always found a way to get to her and was soon calling her upwards of 20 times a day. Some of his messages included threats, like he wasn't going to let her go, or the only thing that would make him stop was if he killed himself or died, a sentiment I'm sure many stalking victims can relate to. In doing research, I found a Reddit talking about this case, and many commenters shared their own experience with stalkers. One woman said that she spoke with the police, who couldn't really do anything. She said the only thing that would stop her stalker was a bullet. The cop responded that, off the record, yeah. Milad was also a victim of Ramin's obsession. Ramin would message him 20 times a day, including one message that said that he, Ramin, would die by suicide if he could muster up the courage. Annoying phone calls are one thing, but the stalking took a horrifying turn in 2022 when Zora heard a knock at her door one morning after her husband had left for work. Opening the door, she was frightened to find Ramin standing on the other side with flowers in hand. Terrified, she called the police. Once a stalker crosses the line of coming to your home, the victim can find themselves in a whole new level of danger. When Ramin crossed that boundary, he showed he didn't care about Zora's request to be left alone. He didn't care that she said no. It also seemed as though he was maybe showing off, that even though she was blocking him and telling him no and was a tech expert, he was subconsciously showing her that he was able to find out where she lived and knew the schedule of those who lived in the house. Now that Ramin was not only going to Zora's home, but bringing gifts, it highlighted the level of delusion. This wasn't a man fighting to earn back the love of a scorned ex. This was a man who had created a delusion that he was trying to force into reality. It was reported he had even told people in his life that he and Zora were in a romantic relationship. Ramin saw no issue in calling to threaten the life of this woman and then turning around offering her gifts, as if that excused those past behaviors. His level of fantasy only increased the level of danger. If you've ever visited our blog at murderintherain.com, you have seen that most of our sources come from newspapers.com. The extensive collection of old newspapers at newspapers.com provides a treasure trove of historical crime reporting, offering a unique perspective on unresolved cold cases and forgotten mysteries. By utilizing newspapers.com's powerful search tools and advanced filters, true crime enthusiasts can uncover new leads, previously unnoticed details, and overlooked connections in old crime stories. The ability to access digitized newspapers from various time periods and regions allows researchers to gain a deeper understanding of the social, cultural, and political context surrounding a particular crime, offering valuable insights into the motives and circumstances of the case. Newspapers.com's vast archive of articles, obituaries, editorials, and letters to the editor can help true crime podcast hosts piece together a comprehensive narrative of a criminal case, shedding light on both the victims and perpetrators involved. By cross-referencing information from multiple newspapers and articles on newspapers.com, researchers can verify facts, corroborate witness statements, and identify discrepancies in news coverage, ultimately adding a layer of credibility and accuracy to their true crime investigations. The convenience of accessing newspapers.com's digitized library from anywhere with an internet connection allows true crime enthusiasts to conduct in-depth research and analysis on the go, enabling them to uncover compelling stories and insights that may have been previously hidden in the archives. To get started on your own newspapers.com journey, go to newspapers.com/crime. When you sign up, use discount code MURDERINTHERAIN to get 20% off. There were at least two other occasions in which it was known Ramin went to Zora's home in Redmond without her consent. One of those incidents was in February of 2023 when Ramin appeared at the home offering her a scarf. On each occasion, Ramin left the property without incident. In a more bizarre gesture, it was learned later that Ramin had hired a jazz band to play outside of her home for 2 hours. Thankfully, for unknown reasons, he canceled that order. Another extreme threat made by Ramin was that he was going to return to Zora's home, set himself on fire, and engulf a beloved tree of hers in flames in an effort to also burn down her house. The danger and obsession even spread to uninvolved parties. No one knew that Ramin had tracked down the contact information for Zora's female friends, but he did, and he had started to reach out to them as well. It's unclear how often he was bothering her friends, but this level of contact shows just how intense his obsession was becoming. It was later found that Ramin had gone to Zora's neighborhood on multiple occasions, even staying the night at local hotels to be near her. On at least one occasion, he parked down the street from her home and watched her from his vehicle for reasons we can only assume were nefarious. After nearly a year of this dangerous behavior, Zora had reached the limit of her patience, and on November 6, 2022, she asked, probably even begged Ramin, to leave her and her family alone. He didn't listen, and he continued to call. That's not the only time she told him no or told him to stop. It was just noted that on November 6th, some sort of foot was put down, if you will. Zora's request was not only ignored, but it seemed Ramin twisted her words into enticing him to torture her even more. Throughout December of 2022, Ramin called Zora no less than 50 times. She went to a convention. He showed up unexpectedly. The peak came when Ramin called Zora 100 times in a single day. Any of those calls that were answered were met with Ramin on the other side, crying, begging to speak with Zora. For an understanding of just how intense 100 calls in one day is, if he used every hour in the day, that's still 4 times an hour. If he only attempted for, let's say, 12 hours, that's just about 8 times an hour or every 7.5 minutes. 2 more aggressive and threatening voicemails were left for Zora on February 28, 2023. From the time she asked him to stop in November to February, Ramin's behaviors had only intensified. This was also when Zora learned Ramin had been recording any and all communications he had had with Zora without her knowledge or consent. What Zora didn't know at that time was that the ordeal with Ramin and her life would be over in less than 2 weeks from those calls. Reaching the end of her polite rope, Zora decided it was time to take stronger action against him since he wasn't responding to her pleas for him to stop. On March 3, 2023, Zora and Malad were able to obtain a formal no-contact protection order against Ramin. When they filed the request, they stated that Ramin's bursts of anger and delusion made her fear for her life and the lives of her loved ones. They explained the efforts made to keep Ramin from contacting herself and her friends, but how they had no success. Additionally, Zora had recently had back surgery. Recovery left her requiring 24-hour care, and she was scared that her physical inability to respond to a crisis could lead to serious injury or worse. She basically said, "I can't move, and if this dude shows up to my house again, there's nothing I'll be able to do about it." In her complaint, Zora said, quote, "All of this has caused me great distress and pain, and now I am suffering from a deep-seated fear for my safety. It has taken a toll on my recovery. I haven't been able to open the curtains in my bedroom out of fear of him being outside watching me." Getting the no-contact order felt like a success, but only briefly. The next step after awarding the order to the complainant is to inform the perpetrator. In this case, the order would inform Ramin that he was not to get near or make contact with Zora or Malad. He would also be told of the upcoming court hearing on March 17th. There was a bit of a hang-up with that second part of the order, though. It would be up to the Redmond Police Department to serve the order. Because Ramin was a long-haul truck driver, he was always on the move, and there wasn't the manpower or accessibility to get the order to him. Even if officers could track down his last known location, I can only assume that to approve a budget to get an officer to that location somewhere in the country while hoping Ramin would still be there was probably out of the question. So even though Zora and Malad took the proper steps to protect themselves, they didn't have much more than acknowledgement from the court that what Ramin was doing wasn't okay. Since Ramin was not served the order, it wasn't technically fully in place. Without him knowing about the order or the court date, all of it was just kind of moot. For anyone who has ever been in an abusive relationship or has had a stalker or, heck, you just consume a lot of true crime, you know a protection order is kind of a joke. You've warned the person not to come near you, but if they do, what's going to stop them? Waving a piece of paper in their face? Hoping they won't do anything before you can contact the authorities and they can arrive? It's really not much help. It was 7 days after the order had been granted. Zora was still recovering from her surgery. Milad was working and taking care of his family. Zora's mother was also living at the home, possibly to help with the caregiving Zora needed. They were all still consumed with fear as Ramin had not yet been served the order and his location remained unknown. At 1:45 a.m., a call came in to 911. It was Zora's mother. She had been awoken by a commotion in the home. I can only assume that the noises she heard made her think the family's worst nightmare was coming true, and Ramin had once again come to the house. And she was right. Not taking any chances by leaving her bedroom, Zora's mother escaped out of a window and ran to a neighbor's house. It was there she called for help and waited anxiously to learn what was going on in the house and if her daughter and son-in-law were okay. Local authorities were aware of Ramin and the danger he posed, so they responded quickly to the call. Arriving at the house, they found Milad lying on the ground near the front door of the house. He had been shot but was still alive. First responders attempted CPR, but it was unsuccessful, and he eventually died at the scene. In their rush to help Milad, the concern for the location of the active shooter was briefly pushed aside. Going into the house, though, police called out, got no response. It didn't take long to realize what that noise had been that caused Zora's mother to flee. Also lying on the floor, dead from a gunshot, was Zora. Her stalker and killer, Ramin, was also dead from a self-inflicted gunshot. In front of the house sat a red truck with Oregon plates. It was believed to have been used by Ramin to disguise his arrival at Zora's home. The swiftness of Ramin's actions showed just how useless a protective order is. Let's say authorities had been able to get the paperwork to Ramin and that he was aware he would be breaking the law if he approached Zora or her home. He clearly didn't care about laws or even his own life, so why would that stop him? Zora did everything she could to stop this man and protect herself, and it still wasn't enough. Because Zora's mother was able to escape, authorities responded to the attack quickly and hoped to prevent anything like this from happening. Although it was too late, her escape showed just how serious the situation was and how fearful the family had been. It makes me wonder if anyone in that home was ever sleeping deeply, or if they were always on edge, waiting for what happened to have happened. Because Milad was outside and near the door, it makes me wonder if he wasn't also trying to get away to seek help. Maybe he knew it was too late for his wife and he wanted to try to stop Ramin. It illustrates just how desperate the whole situation was. Investigators spoke to Ramin's ex-wife, who still lived in Houston. She said that in the weeks leading up to the murders, she sensed a difference in his behavior. For reasons we'll never know, Ramin latched onto Zora and became obsessed. His mind created a world in which they were in a relationship, and by that point, it didn't matter if she said no, that she was married, or that she was calling the police. He was hyper-fixated on her, and nothing was going to stop him. There's no telling why all of that meant that he had to hurt Zora and Milad. We've heard so many stories involving a party, usually the man, who has a sense of, if I can't have you, no one can. It's delusional, illogical, and we can't understand it because we don't think that way. But this case and Ramin's obsession highlight just how serious stalking cases can be and how pathetic the protections for victims are. For the most part, I think the intentions surrounding protection orders are positive, and perhaps in some cases it is enough of a threat to scare the perpetrator off. But the murders of Zora and Milad are a prime example showing how even if a victim follows every rule, takes every step, reports the abuse, files orders, demands to be left alone, there isn't much anyone can do to stop a determined stalker who could very well become a killer. Stalking isn't just about someone being a nuisance, sending bothersome texts. There's an entire psychological element that only adds to the fear and stress a victim experiences.
Did you read anywhere in which order they were killed? I just wonder what the mindset would be. I wonder if the obsessive mind would want to kill the person they're obsessed with first or the one that's the largest threat.
I don't have the police report with that kind of information, but that's a very interesting question. And I have played out several scenarios in my head of, was there a knock at the door in the middle of the night? And Milad went to the door, and that's why he was there. Like, he was shot first, and being the male, to be kind of out of the way, if you will.
Right.
So is that why he was out by the door? Or did this guy sneak into the house, find them in the bedroom, they woke up, and he made a run for it because he shot Zora first? I'm not sure.
And whose mother was it?
It was Zora's.
Okay.
And I'm, again, there wasn't any reasoning for her there, so I don't know if she had moved here to be with her family or if she was here for short term as kind of a caregiver while her daughter healed. And I think maybe with both the Zora and Ramin's bodies being in the home, that Milad came to the door or was closer to the door, and he shot him to just have him out of the way, and then had whatever kind of exchange with Zora, if any. It doesn't say how long it lasted. So did he talk to her at all, or was this it? And he went in with that in mind and just did that. While protection orders are good to have as far as building evidence in a case, they really don't do anything to actually protect the concerned parties. And I'm not sure what the answer is. Is it harsher laws for stalking, harsher sentences for harassment and threats? But something needs to be done to discourage and or treat this kind of behavior, especially when a stalker resides in another state and has the ability to evade detection due to mobility, like, say, a long-haul truck driver, with more seriousness. For most people, we think of social media as a fun place to share life updates and photos with our friends. For a desperate person, social media is just one step in many to be able to find out everything about you. With just a few clicks, you can find someone's phone number, home address, employer, friends, and even more personal details. Okay, I want to share a personal story just to illustrate how easy it is to find info. Not that I am a stalker. This was years ago, probably like 10 years ago. And a couple days in a row, I saw this cute guy on a motorcycle, and it was clear we were kind of on the same commute. I was able to, after two or three viewings of this man, based only on the jacket he was wearing and that he rode a motorcycle, I was able to, on my computer, track down his social media pages. I found out where he worked, and in all of that, I learned he had a girlfriend, which was the goal. I found all of that out just because I was curious about a stranger. So if you combine that type of access with the mind of someone like Ramin, who finds a woman like Zora trying to build a career in public eye, and it was a recipe for disaster. So hopefully that didn't make me sound like a creep. I think most ladies have done even deeper dives when you're going on a date or if a friend has a date.
You must.
You really have to.
You have. No one. You can't trust any fool.
I had to break that to a friend of mine. She said that she was going on a date with someone that she met on an app, and he had asked about Googling. And she was like, oh my gosh, don't Google me. Well, she has music, like old music, that she doesn't want people to hear. But she was so adamant, it kind of freaked the guy out. And I had to explain to her, because she's kind of an old soul, that it would be bizarre to not Google someone or not try to look up or anything. In this day and age, you have to.
Don't open that trunk. Do not open that trunk over there.
Right.
Whatever. Just whatever. If I
it's
leave
fine.
This room, you can't and you shouldn't.
Nothing bad.
And I hope you don't.
Yeah.
You don't. I don't want what's in that trunk to be born.
Well, that happened with Emily. She had met someone on an app. And before the date, she ran him through our Ben Verified background system that we use for the show. And he had several domestic violence charges, I think.
You got to crunch those numbers.
So she had to cancel the date. Like, sorry.
Well, I guess only because you're not doing it for anything nefarious. That's very savvy of you.
Thank you.
That's some real detective work that you were able to track that person down because he drove past you on a motorcycle.
Yeah.
Well.
Don't mess with me.
I try not to.
Oh, that was more of a blanket statement, not a direct threat at you.
Okay.
But it just shows how someone with very basic computer skills and research, I mean, I research a lot, but back then, pretty darn basic. Boom. Oh, he's got a girlfriend. Okay, I'll just look at him on the road. He's cute. I won't, like, show up at his work and go, hey, couldn't help but see how cute you were.
used to be they'd say your name in the newspaper and they'd also give your address.
Oh my God. This home is going to be empty all winter as they go visit their family up north. You can go visit it at 1234. Social media has also made it a bit of a requirement for anyone who is trying to have a career in media to also have a presence online. It's become expected of celebrities and even everyday folks to feel the pressure to share details of their life to be accessible to fans. In doing that, you're inadvertently creating this vulnerable space where you might be sharing too much with people who don't need to know those things. One of the biggest changes that can be made to help the victims of stalkers is for authorities to take the threat of a stalker seriously. How often do we hear stories about women who were basically turned away from the police station because nothing could be done unless they were severely hurt or even killed? The deaths of Zora and Malad weren't felt just by their loved ones. The tech community lost two skillful and rising stars. The Farsi-speaking community lost a member who was focused on helping them find the same joy and success that she had found. Their deaths left gaps in both their professional and personal communities, all because she was willing to share her voice and talent with those who needed it. If you or someone you know is being stalked, you can get help. Find resources and make a plan for safety by visiting thehotline.org. You can also call 1-800-799-7233, or you can text START to 88788. If you are in immediate danger, please call 911. Because you're not alone in this, even though it might feel that way. Be safe. Don't put things online that you don't want people to know.
Check, check. Yep.
I love you.
I love you too.
You seem to be in a really good place today.
Thanks, man.
Like you're feeling a little better.
Maybe.
Do you feel like you are?
Maybe. Mm. Yeah. I don't know. I hesitate
to
render
okay.
a verdict. The day is young. Could all fall apart at any moment.
Of course, they blocked. Sorry, my tongue got in the way of my mouth. Is that the least romantic gesture possible? Got you a jazz band.
What would be worse than a jazz band? I guess a mobile slaughterhouse. I don't have any pickled pig's feet. I'll just pickle my own with my mouth.
That's one of the worst sentences you've ever said. Wow.
Yeah.
We almost made it a year.
I knew it wouldn't work. I couldn't
maintain. It could never last.
No.
As that word isn't there.
The movie Enough starring Jennifer Lopez.
That's right.
The cop's like, you can't do nothing.
Can't do nothing.
Well, what if he did? You can't do nothing. Well, what about that?
Maybe that's why I love that movie, because
that's why I love it.
So real.
She has to take it into her own hands.
That's right.
And go, hey, Billy Campbell, enough. And then she beats him almost to death and throws him over a railing. Well,
Hell yeah.
He gets punched over a railing.
Spoilies.
Falls onto a glass table to death. It's great.
It's a great movie. I can't get enough of it.